Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Today is May 10th. It's Friday at the end of the week. It's 10 o'clock in the morning on the Eastern Seaboard, and I'm sure you know where you are. And I try my very best to know where I am. This is going to be a very interesting day because we've got so many different subjects to talk about. We're going to start off with a cosmetic dentist, Stephen Roth. And then we'll be speaking at 11 o'clock with Assembly Member Mayer and Shelley Mayer. And then at 11:30 with the International Association of Firefighters President Barry McGoey of Local 628 in the city of Yonkers. So there's a lot to cover here, and it should all be very, very interesting. I guess the most intriguing thing about our first guest, who will be calling into the show, is Dr. Stephen E. Roth. He's a dental doctor. He's also the founder of a process called Cosmolite. And he's been a consultant for WebMD. He's a frequent media commentator, different news shows like Inside Edition, New York One, and others. A lot of this notoriety comes from the fact that it was Dr. Roth that initiated this process in modern dentistry that he calls Cosmolite. So he was one of its inventors. He's been in practice for over 25 years, specialized in cosmetic implant dentistry. His practice is called SmilesNY.com. It's based in Manhattan. And Dr. Roth is a graduate of Columbia University and the University of Pennsylvania School of Dental Medicine, and his associations include memberships with the American Academy of Cosmetic Dentistry, the American Equilibration Society, I don't know what that is, and the American Dental Association, and he also holds a staff position at the Beth Israel Medical Center. And I guess he got most of his notoriety because while he was working with his celebrity clients, Dr. Roth invented the revolutionary Cosmolite process. And it's a new cosmetic dental procedure which offers a temporarily enhanced smile, as he puts it, eliminate concerns associated with cosmetic and restorative dentistry. And he does this without the use of braces or bleaching or genetic modification. And it's a very quick process, evidently. He says it's affordable as well. Virtually pain-free. I love that part of it because I tell you, I don't know if I could share this with you, especially when we have a dentist of such renown. I'm scared to death of the pain. You know, actually, I was thinking about it. It's not pain that scares me. It's the helplessness. It's the inability to, once you get shot up with Novocaine, that you don't feel a thing. And I guess, that's like unnerving to me. It's a mental fear. Oh, my God. So, anyway, so that seems to be my issue. Maybe it's yours. Maybe it's not. We'll find out from the doctor what the story is. And evidently, part of this solution is to determine whether there should be a permanent solution, such as porcelain veneers and so on and so forth. So it's part of a discovery process, evidently, which is very, very intriguing. So unbelievable resume of bona fides. It's just very, very interesting. So I guess before the doctor comes on, we could, we'll just end up finding out from him a little bit more about the process and so on and so forth. So I see that it's about four after. So I hope that, again, something hasn't happened and that we've created a stir here, but we're going to figure this out in a minute. Oh, I keep forgetting now that I put in this new password code. It is so complicated because I've always been concerned as a security feature. You know, we have so many people who speak to us and it's all based on anonymity And it's important that their identity is protected. So I was always concerned, God forbid, I would have misplaced my cell phone or lost it or something like that. And it seems like easy thing to do, for example, to get more than just simply a four-digit passcode. So I really went through it. I mean, mine, it goes on for days. And so it's just interesting to see. Sometimes it takes me too long to think about it. You know, it's the other thing, too. I'm wondering, God forbid, you get a stroke or something like that. You know, I'll never be able to open up any of these things. And then I'll probably have to get another cell phone and who knows what. All right, so let's see if we can go to the doctor and ask him to give us a call. And if everything is okay. So I'll be calling him. You won't be hearing the other side of the conversation, but I'm ringing away. And we'll see in a moment. Okay. Hello, Dr. Roth. Hi, this is Hezzy Aris from Westchester on the Level, the radio show. I'm okay. Are you going to be able to give us a call today? Okay. Okay. Well, really, we should be calling now. So do you have our phone number? Say that again. Oh, absolutely. We'll do that in a split second. Thank you so much. Yes, please. Thank you. Bye. Okay. So we're going to need to... Okay, one second. All right, just give me a second, folks. I made this a little bit more complicated than even I should have done this. So I made a little bit of a mistake at my end. One second. All right. All right, what I did was, you know, because the client is always right, so, and he's our guest, so he asked that I text this to him, and I'd forgotten that I'd not entered this into my cell phone. You know, we're talking about issues, right? So, so it goes. All right, so let me just see if I can do this and do this right. Okay. All right, we're going to almost get there. I get so stressed out in these situations. Isn't that pathetic? Okay, here it is. And just need to do one thing. Okay. I remember looking at something I did yesterday, and I said, no, this is like overkill. And I had put in some numbers that I thought I should know. And evidently, I should have left it in there. Because it would have worked better. Oh, but go figure. Okay. All right. So now I'm going to say, please call. And there's a number. All right. You know, this is an age where it's really crazy. There's so much that I don't even remember. You know, I have to literally look on the website in order just to find out what the number is. Oh, wait, I think he's calling. Hello, Dr. Roth.
How are you?
How are you, sir? I was just dialing you away, and I didn't realize you already called us. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, it's really kind of you to come on the show. Actually reiterate what I had found on your website, Cosmolite, and read your resume of accomplishment. My God, I'm in total awe. So I thought you were much younger than having 25-year resume in this business, but this is great.
Yeah.
So you've got to be very proud.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, one of the things that impressed me, you know, like I honed in on it, was like the last paragraph of this write-up, and you said here that it is virtually pain-free. And I was already, you know, bowing in deference to that because I don't know what it is about dentists. They've always scared the hell out of me, even though every dentist I've ever met in my whole life has been nice.
So, well, you know, it's a very common complaint. And I think there are a lot of people that get a little bit traumatized as children. And all it takes is one bad experience, and it kind of stays with you for a lifetime. In addition to that, you know, obviously the media portrays anything dental as terrible. Every time, you know, somebody is trying to describe a bad experience, so they'll say, oh, I'd rather have a root canal than go through this again.
Okay. Oh, that's true. That's true. I've heard that, right.
Yeah. And the truth is that almost all dentistry is painless today. And, you know, there are some great practitioners out there who really know how to control pain and anxiety, and it should never even be a factor.
That's so true. You know, it's funny you talk about control of pain, but that seems to be a demeanor that's, I guess, wrapped itself around the medical profession. I would say, what, the last 10 or 15 years? Where it's no longer, a bad omen to discuss pain, because people shouldn't need to suffer if there's a way to avoid it.
Correct. And you know, a very big part of the education of a doctor or a dentist is controlling pain and making patients comfortable. And that didn't just start 10 years ago. That's been going on for a long, long time.
Right.
But you're right. It hasn't been fashionable to talk about it for the last 10 years is about the only time that it has been, you know, fashionable to talk about. But it's always been a big part of any doctor or dentist's life.
Absolutely. Well, it's a great segue for us to go into, you know, people smiling and people being happy. And what got you into dentistry? You evidently weren't badly imprinted with something.
No.
With dentistry. Evidently,
I actually had a great role model growing up who was a dentist who helped me out a lot.
Great.
And when I was in college, I worked at the St. Luke's Clinic right near Columbia University, where I went to school.
Right.
And I volunteered there, and I learned a lot. And all the people that worked there were terrific, and they were really helpful. So they were great role models as well.
Beautiful, just beautiful. And how did you? So it was dentistry that moved you along into getting into that esoteric crowd of the paparazzi and the actors and the actresses. Is that how you got into creating this new technology?
Yes. You know, I'm very fortunate to practice in New York City, and I'm in a pretty nice location on the Upper East Side.
Yep.
And, you know, because of some of the people that I work on, you know, I've been introduced to a lot of people in the film industry, and, you know, one thing led to another, and, you know, I've worked on several movies where we created some smiles for the actors.
Nice.
And that developed into, well, wow, this really works for them. Why can't it work for the average patient? And what I started to do was create templates that could be tried on over people's smiles so they could see how good they could look with cosmetic dentistry. And the story I love to tell is if you took a patient who was severely overweight and you gave them a pill, and for the next 24 hours, they would be at normal body weight. But after the 24 hours, the body weight would come right back on. What do you think they would do to get to the normal body weight?
Mm-hmm.
When they realize how good it feels and how healthy they feel, they do anything. And it's the same thing with Cosmolite. It is specifically designed for people who have a hard time envisioning what a better smile is going to do for them and a healthier looking mouth is going to do for them emotionally, psychologically, you know, socially. And a lot of people think about it, but they can't envision what it's going to be like. And this gives them the opportunity to do that.
I know this may sound very simple, but I'm wondering if this is more of a male issue than a female issue, because like all the women I know, they can conceptualize how to lay out a living room and how that's going to look. I have no clue, none whatsoever. Is it the same thing about that smile that you're talking about?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think that that's definitely a factor. Men definitely have a harder time visualizing, but there are plenty of women who have a hard time visualizing as well when it's on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're very good at looking at somebody else and saying, wow, this could look great, or this room could look terrific. But it's very hard to look at yourself at times. And sure, when you go to a beauty salon, you sit in front of a mirror the entire time you're there. You're never not in front of a mirror.
Yeah.
When you go to a dentist, you're never in front of a mirror.
Uh-huh.
So what we did is we created the ability to show people photos as well as mirror images so they can see how great they could look. And they start to look at themselves as, wow, let me see what I can do to improve myself. I mean, one of the things you'll notice in weight loss programs is they always recommend that you take a photo of yourself with a newspaper to show you what you look like on a certain date. So when you start to lose the weight, you can look back and be that much more motivated to continue on the program. It's the same with the Cosmolite program. The first thing we do when we see patients is we take a photo of their smile.
That's beautiful. I didn't realize that dentistry required so much psychology and psychiatry. Do you also charge by the hour for that too?
Or is that, no, we don't.
Or is that part of
No, we don't. But it's a big part of dealing with patients. You know, whatever field you're in, there's tremendous amounts of psychology. You know, there are patients that walk in the room and tell you exactly what they want and what they need, and then there are patients who don't say a word, and you have to figure out what it is that they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So sure, there's tremendous psychology involved.
Well, absolutely. I concur, even though I'm not in dentistry. I think that's really important. So, and before you met all these mentors at St. Luke's, did you know you were going to be moving toward dentistry?
You know, when I was in college, I was definitely geared towards the sciences.
Okay.
And I also spent a couple of years in college doing sculpting. And I liked working a lot with my hands. And it seemed like a natural progression because you use your hands a lot and you have to be creative and you have to be able to carve and you have to be able to mold and you have to visualize three-dimensional objects. So it seemed like a natural flow.
That really is amazing. You know, quite often we don't reflect back and we don't give ourselves enough credit for our life to recognize that each of our experiences in life is a building, another platform in building who we are and what we've become. So it's very exciting to be able to trace that back. It's good for you to even recognize that. That's beautiful. And how did you go beyond then? What made you, do you know if there was a catalyst in your life that said, hey, I can help people out and I could find what they're really looking for themselves, you know, through dentistry? Do you remember what that catalyst was?
Yeah, well, you know, I think there's a couple of things. I think that when you're in dental school and you treat your first patients, and a lot of the patients that come to the dental school maybe can't afford, you know, the best that dentistry has to offer.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start to help patients and you're in your early 20s and you're in dental school and you get the satisfaction of helping somebody or getting them out of pain or making them look better, that starts to build a lifelong passion.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can improve somebody's life in whatever way, that's tremendously satisfying. And you build on it. You build on it. And when I take some of the, you know, artistic parts of it, and you get a lot of pleasure out of creating something that looks great and people really love, that builds as well. And it just becomes this sort of cascade of satisfaction. you know, I'm actually right now I'm about to go to my daughter's college graduation, and she's an artist, and you know, just seeing the things that she's creating reminds me when I was younger of doing the sculpting and doing artistic things, and then going to dental school and doing some of the artistic things there. It just builds a tremendous amount of satisfaction and passion towards what I do.
How wonderful. Well, congratulations to you and your family. That's a wonderful, wonderful step forward. That's beautiful.
Thanks.
I wanted to ask you, well, you know what? Before we continue, we should tell people that you are Dr. Stephen Roth, and I guess your firm is smilesy.com, and you're at 20 63rd Street in Manhattan.
Yeah.
And so you created this Cosmolite process. Can you tell us a little bit of what that process entails?
Okay. So a patient comes into the office and they express
Is this a joke? I was going to ask you if this was a joke, you know, like, so a patient...
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. A patient comes into the office and expresses the desire to take a look at their smile, and we put them through a very specific process of taking photographs of their mouth and their smile, and we then take the digital photos and put them up on a computer screen, and we look at all aspects of their smile and we discuss it. And at that point, we take impressions, or we actually use a digital scanner, which takes the place of impressions, to get an imprint of what their teeth are.
Wow.
And we send that to the Cosmolite lab, and if it's by the digital scanner, we send it electronically. And once they have that, within 48 hours, they return the Cosmolite template to us, which can sit over the teeth or can be bonded onto the teeth. So the patient can actually take it home and show their family what they look like, or show their spouse or their boyfriend or girlfriend. And they get a real nice view of what it's going to look like and what it's going to feel to have the cosmetic dentistry. In addition to that, we take a set of photos with the Cosmolite template in place so they can look objectively at the picture, not just at a mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And well, that's really the whole process.
But I had no idea that the technology had advanced so far, because they used to have a laborious imprint of your teeth, and they would make, clay images or some special putty, and it would would have to harden, and it was like such a to-do, but... this sounds painless, actually.
Well, the way the digital technology works is all we do is take a wand that's connected to a computer, and it takes photographs very quickly over the teeth and gives a 3D image to the lab, and they print out a model and make the template right on the model. So, yeah, the technology is tremendous. We can use that now for all of the dental impressions, so there's never goop in your mouth at all.
Mm. And it's got to also be the final effect of all of this is exactness, or as exact as you can come, so that it's also doesn't cause pain in its final outcome.
Oh, there's no pain involved at all, and you barely even touch the patient's mouth, and the accuracy is far greater than anything we've had before.
Amazing. So were you at the cutting edge of that as well, or were you?
I did not develop it, but we're one of the first people in New York City to have
it. And this is definitely the future, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, digital scanning technology is now exploding in so many different fields.
Mm-hmm. And how does one get to know that they are or can be a candidate for, reassessing their smile? Well, what causes people to come to your office?
Well, you know, some people come because they're looking at their smile and they don't like it. There are other people that come just for general care, and when we start to have a conversation, we discover that.
I see. Well, it's got to be monumental for someone to say, you know, I don't like my smile. Let me go call up Dr. Steve Roth. You know, but I guess that's what it is. You know, it's as simple as that.
Yeah, it really is. But some people aren't aware. Sometimes they're sent in by a spouse or a girlfriend or a boyfriend who don't like their smile. sometimes they don't feel like they're advancing in their job quite enough, or they don't feel like their social skills are what they could be. And sometimes you have to look at yourself and say, hey, I'm wearing a very expensive, nice suit, but my smile looks terrible.
I see.
If you look at statistics, a smile is rated as one of the top three turnoffs that somebody finds in the opposite sex.
Turn off?
If a bad smile.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm glad I haven't met those one out of three. But whatever the case is, this sounds so fascinating. So that you're really giving a gift to people, which they probably never imagined that they would ever get. And it's affordable. Is this like you only would take care of, you know, the stars on cinema and stage and screen, or is it affordable for regular folks?
99% of the cases that I do are on regular folks like you and me.
Okay, well, thank you for including me in that category. I am one of the regular folks. No pretense here, but that's okay. So
yeah.
Really, so those are most of your clients are like regular people, and
absolutely,
and it is basically affordable. I mean, you know,
there's expense involved, but
sure. You
know, one of the great things about dental offices today is the ability to help finance any kind of major treatment that patients mm-hmm. do, just like buying a house or buying a car. You know, you can afford the monthly payment, you can afford
right.
to do it.
That's great. And then what about some of those things that we hear about dentistry, like mercury? Is that still being used in dentistry? Or some people are very susceptible and allergic to it, or more sensitive to it than others?
Well, you know, there's no question that that has become a questionable product in most of the world to use. It's still fully approved in the United States.
Okay.
However, in my practice, we haven't used any mercury fillings in over 20 years.
Wow.
And not just because of the mercury, but because the other products are so much better.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so much more aesthetic.
What is it about the smile? When we talk about the smile, I guess we don't realize that the teeth and that whole infrastructure, that moves your soft tissue that's on the outside. So your smile says much about your health and who you are as well. And that is that why so many people who want to get ahead in business feel that, hey, let me consider a possibility of changing the way I look?
Well, I think that it's all about how you look.
Okay.
Everyone knows that when you're dealing with somebody on a professional basis or in sales or in many different fields, people like working with people that look good and healthy to them.
Yeah.
They don't like working with people that look like something's wrong with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's as simple and basic as that.
It certainly does seem that way. And what sort of
yeah.
staff have you created in all this time? Are there specialties in the field among your staff? And I saw that you were also a staff member of Beth Israel Hospital. Was I correct? Did I remember right?
Yeah, I used to be on staff there when they had a general dental department.
Okay.
You know, there are in my practice, what we do is we actually work very closely with a board certified periodontist who's a gum specialist,
mm-hmm.
because the health of the gums is the most important thing. And we don't do cosmetic dentistry on patients that don't have healthy mouths. We make them healthy first.
Okay.
Just like you wouldn't build a house on quicksand.
Mm-hmm.
You don't fix teeth on top of bad gum and bone.
Right.
And I believe that healthy gum and bone is the most important thing there is to the human body. And that's one of the big contributions that we as dentists make, is getting patients' mouths healthy and teaching them how to care for themselves and how to do proper oral hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
So that is really important to us, to have on staff a board-certified periodontist. And we have dental hygienists who clean teeth and teach people how to keep their mouths clean.
That's amazing. And I guess we all do need to have a lesson in that, because we seemingly haven't gotten all the correct information for a very long time. Or it keeps changing, but I guess we're learning. So I guess we shouldn't think of it as a bad thing, but it's a good thing if we move ahead and learn new things. If you bear with me just a moment, we're going to take a quick break to find out what's going on at the Westchester Broadway Theater. So listen in for a moment, and we'll be right back with Dr. Stephen Roth, dental doctor. One moment.
Luck be a lady tonight. One of Broadway's most high-spirited musicals ever is on stage now at the Westchester Broadway Theater through June 9th. The Tony Award winner for Best Musical of the Year, Guys and Dolls. It's one of the liveliest, funniest, most colorful collection of Broadway characters you'll ever see. The larger-than-life world of Damon Runyon's New York City, where the gamblers, the showgirls, the coppers, and the missionary workers all collide with hilarious and unexpected results. And the wonderful sing-along score includes some of Broadway's most memorable hits, like A Bushel in Effect, If I Were a Bell, Sit Down, You're Rockin' the Boat, and Luck Be a Lady. And remember, your tickets include a delicious served dinner before the show with a choice of six entrees, and all for one low price. Order tickets online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222. Don't miss this bold and brassy Broadway classic, Guys and Dolls. On stage now through June 9th, only at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Westchester on the Level. Our guest today, Stephen Roth. He's the dentist who created Cosmolite. SmilesNY.com is where you can find out more information about his services and that of his staff. And you can reach them, if you'd like, by telephone as well, 212-752-6537. So, Dr. Roth, what is it that people need to know that I may not have asked with regard to your practice, the technology that you incorporate, and I guess the end result for them?
I think the most important thing is that it's very important to just go to the dentist, get an exam, find out how healthy you are, get the proper digital dental x-rays, which have almost no radiation,
mm-hmm.
get a regular examination, get your teeth cleaned, okay? The one thing I tell all my patients is the patients that come to the dentist to get their mouths cleaned four times a year, not two times a year,
mm-hmm.
are the healthiest patients in the practice and have the least amount of problems and spend the least amount of money. It's very simple. The bacteria that cause problems in the mouth recolonize every 90 days after a cleaning. So if you get your teeth cleaned every 90 days, that's not a problem. You solve the problem. Many patients don't realize that. They think that if they brush their teeth three times a day, they're okay. 40% of the bacterial plaque that's in your mouth is in between the teeth.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't come out except with floss. And even if you're a great flosser, you still don't get all of it. It has to be removed professionally. So I very much believe in being direct and honest with people, and I tell them, you need to come in four times a year as an adult to be healthy.
Yeah.
And it's a general rule, and there are people that are just so fantastic at cleaning their mouths, they don't have to do that. But for the most part, almost everybody has to do that. So that to me is the most important thing, is get on a great oral hygiene program, and things will get better from there. The cosmetics and everything else is important, but nothing's more important than your health.
Well, I never realized that the health of your mouth and your teeth and the whole structure is very much related to the rest of your body, particularly your heart. I had no idea that bacteria in the mouth could cause heart attacks and cause great difficulties, and that's amazing. But I guess we're learning more and more, so maybe we'll be taking care of each other a little bit better. now that we know a little bit more.
Absolutely. And the research just keeps developing more and more. And all of it is pointing to the fact that a healthy mouth with as little as inflammation as possible is critical to full body health.
Mm. And are people incorporating this sort of, are people more aware, or are we still pretty ignorant of so much?
Well, you know, I think some people are aware.
Mm-hmm.
I think the general public is not aware. And here's how you can say that. Everyone knows how bad smoking is for you.
Right.
There are still, I don't know, 25, 30 million people at least in the United States that still smoke.
Yeah.
So obviously the psychology is deeper than just having knowledge, because everyone knows that smoking kills, yet people
Correct.
Still do it. People know that obesity kills, yet the fast food companies are filled with customers 24 hours a day. So you have to be concerned with yourself. You have to educate yourself. And even then, sometimes it's difficult to overcome the psychological hurdles of making yourself a healthy person.
Mm.
So it's not as you know, it's not an easy answer. But you educate your patients, you educate the public. I believe as a dentist, you have an obligation to help educate the overall general public, and you take it from there.
Absolutely. And tell me, how did you get involved? You said that, I guess, maybe through your practice, some people in the film industry. And did you work on creating unbelievable teeth for these aliens that would invade the Earth or something like that? So is that part of your technology and part of your sculpturing from a younger age that's come out on the film screen?
Yes, I believe that. I believe that. I think that, I'm fortunate to have been referred certain people that required my services for looking good in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it just grew from there.
Wow. And are you excited about that little side thing that you do every now and then?
Yes, I am. It's a lot of fun. I get a lot of pleasure out of it.
You do. And do you see your name in there in lights? Like, do you get like, well, you may not get the top billing, but you probably should.
No, the billing is very minor and not that visible, but it's still a lot of fun.
Yeah, I would still think that, you know, if I saw my name on the film screen somehow, I would get very, very happy. You know, it's just, in a sense, an accomplishment beyond one's basic dream. I think it's wonderful. Wow. It sounds like you've dealt a complete life, and now with your daughter graduating, is she your only child?
I have three children.
All right.
Yeah. One other in college and one almost in high school. So we have a busy, full life.
That's terrific. That's really good. Did they grow up actually being more aware of how to take care of their teeth because of dad in the business?
Absolutely. But you have to be very, very aware of the old adage that the shoemaker's kids have no shoes.
Uh-huh.
You don't want the dentist kids to have no teeth.
That's very funny. That's really very funny. So are any of your kids thinking of following in dad's footsteps and also becoming cosmetic doctors and implant specialists?
You know, I don't know yet. I know my daughter is an artist, but she's not really sure which direction she's going, and the others will find out.
Yeah, well, that's part of the discovery of life. That sounds really interesting.
Absolutely.
Do you ever also do presentations to other people involved in dentistry and implant specialties, in order to be able to teach some of your technology and how you've incorporated it into your practice?
Yes. I'm actually a teacher at something called the Scottsdale Institute of Advanced Dentistry in Arizona.
Okay.
And I teach there. I also teach in locally, I give lectures to study clubs and to conventions, and I do a fair amount of that, and actually enjoy it a lot. It's a lot of fun.
It's got to be very interesting. One thing I read in the Cosmolite website, there was something here called the American Equilibration Society. What is that?
No, that's an interesting society that studies the effect of the human bite as far as it relates to the health of teeth, but also headaches and TMJ problems, and which you may have heard of, and migraines, etc.
Okay, that eluded me because I didn't have my cup of coffee at the time when I looked at it.
Equilibration is a tough word early in the morning.
Yes. But very, very interesting, actually. Is that also something that you're in studying? You know, does that have to do with tinnitus and all these other things?
Yes. Wow. I would say that you cannot practice dentistry without being very aware of the bite and the temporomandibular joints.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's so funny, you know, when we speak, well, it's not funny, but it's so revealing that when we see specialists like you, we learn that there are so many disciplines that revolve about and around that specific central, endeavor. That there's so much that needs to be known, and that it's a panoply of knowledge. And were you always inquisitive and interested? You must love your work to be able to find all of this intriguing and interesting and devoting your time to.
Yes. That's something that I've always taken a lot of pride in doing. But, you know, as you go through the journey in life, you know, you become more and more inquisitive if you like what you're doing.
Absolutely. Well, it's amazing, you know, bump into people like you. People have really, really switched on. This is really exciting stuff. You know?
Yes.
Well, that's actually what we enjoy doing here on the radio, too, because we learned that there's so many brilliant people out there doing wonderful, wonderful things. It's very, very exciting. Really very exciting. What would you like to see in dentistry as you move forward? Do you see an image of dentistry as you move into, let's say, the next decade or the next 5 years?
Yes.
What do you think?
I think that the digital aspects of it are just going to get better and better. And I think that because of that, the comfort level and the ease of accessing care is going to get better and better.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that the holistic approach to health and treating patients is going to increase as well.
And do you believe as our nation becomes older, even though probably New York City is a wonderful place to work because there's a much greater mix, but also an infusion of young people as well as an aging society, does the aging society lend itself to creating and developing new technology?
Absolutely. You know, as the society ages and people are healthy, we get more and more people that need things that we used to not even see because they're keeping their teeth much later in life.
Yeah.
So we do see a tremendous amount of things, and it gives us the greatest opportunity to keep studying and studying.
Wow. So, and then dentistry does require a tremendous amount of study, because if you hadn't studied in the last 5 years, you'd already be a dinosaur by now. It's that quickly evolving, isn't it?
Yes, it's a constant education. If you don't continually educate yourself, you fall way behind.
But I guess many people who want to be at the top of their game are constantly studying. How do you find the time also to continue the study?
You have to make it part of your day and your weekends, and you go travel to seminars, and you continually educate yourself.
Is that part of that process, or is it through seminars where you do the learning? Because you're not going to be taking a six-month course at a dentist school.
Well, there are weekend seminars, and there are week-long seminars, and there's literature to read, And there's tremendous amounts of online access to education as well.
So you're getting a lot of like video and learning experiences.
Yes.
So in a sense, you're being mentored through the new technology of video and film that way?
Yes, absolutely.
Exciting. Wow. Well, so I hope you have a high-speed internet service.
You better, or you're going to be very frustrated.
Well, it'll be buffering a very long time. And, you could always turn over the disc and you could play the other side of vinyl recording from the 1960s,
yeah.
I guess. But it's better just not to be buffering. Well, is there anything else that we should ask you? Maybe something as sublime as your website address and how people go about introducing themselves to you and to your practice?
Well, you know, we have the Cosmolite website, which is www.cosmolite.com, as well as the private practice website, which is www.smilesny, so that's smilesny.com, Smiles New York.
Okay.
And that's the best way to introduce patients, to introduce themselves to us.
That's great. And is Smiles New York, am I wrong? Are there more than one Smiles New York? Or is that all
no.
part of
we're the only ones.
Okay. So then smilesny.com.
Correct.
That's wonderful. Well, I really want to discover more, and I hope you'll come back.
I'd love to. It was a lot of fun.
It wasn't painful to you. It wasn't painful to me, thank God. So I thank you. And but hopefully you'll come back again, and we'll talk about other things now that we have a baseline.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you,
sir. That would be great. It would be my pleasure. Have a great day.
Congratulations on your daughter's graduation.
Thank you.
Be well.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, well, that's Dr. Stephen E. Roth, dental doctor, definitely on the cutting edge of modern dentistry. How exciting. I learned a great deal. Maybe you have too. Well, as we're talking, just in case you want to join us in conversation at about 11 o'clock or so, Assembly Member Shelley Mayer is going to join us. And the backdrop, can you imagine? Here she is, an Assembly Member, well-respected, and at the same time, she has to deal with all the stuff that's going on there in Albany, and it doesn't look so good. I hope they haven't flung anything in her direction, because she's probably undeserving. In fact, from what I know, she's undeserving of anything that would smirch her name. So it'll be very interesting to see how she's dealing with this. Talk about pressure. My God. And then how do you even talk to your colleagues? You know, let's face it, folks. She's got to contend with all people are walking around with wires and videos and stuff like that. I had no idea you could use technology like this. So let's hope she's in a good state of mind, good frame of mind. We'll be able to wish her, you know, good stuff, you know, so that she could keep on doing what she needs to do, which is to work toward the public trust and also to work on our behalf. So that's exciting. And then at 11:30 or so, we're going to speak to Barry McGowey. He's the president of Local 628 of the International Association of Firefighters. And we're going to review certainly that aspect of the budget here that took place yesterday at the Yonkers City Council, in which they talked about budget with regard to the fire department and so on and so forth. So it'll be very interesting to hear what Mr. McGowey has to say. In the meantime, this is really very exciting. At least I found it extremely exciting. For me, I was surprised. Actually, I've been surprised a couple of times. You know, as you well know, Dr. Evan Levine, who's a cardiologist with Montefiore Medical, and he now has affiliations with some other hospitals in Westchester County as well, and he's got a practice in Yonkers. And so what's really interesting is that there was an article that he wrote, which we printed in the Yonkers Tribune, and then the following week we also put into the Westchester Guardian print newspaper. Well, the website from the Yonkers Tribune, boom, all of a sudden we find out that his article was translated into Portuguese. Not the Portuguese back in the old country, in Portugal, but rather it was translated in that humongous, what they call one of those brick countries in the world, the up-and-coming economies of the world, that in Brazil, where they speak Portuguese. So can you imagine his article was picked up, translated into Portuguese, and made the scene over there? I mean, talk about, I don't know, is this clout or what is it? But certainly Dr. Levine's credibility eclipses even that it got picked up all the way in Brazil. Well, yesterday we find out that something else also took people's breath away. We happen to have an advert in our paper on the Yonkers Tribune. It was an appeal to South Korean President Park Geun-hye. An American landmark is at risk was the title of the advert, and it related to the American landmark that is at risk from LG Electronics. LG Electronics is based in Korea. And LG Electronics is planning to erect a high-rise tower in the Hudson River Palisades four times higher. It's 143 feet high than the zoning height limit respected for decades by all other companies. And if built, it would damage forever the adjacent Interstate Park and its unspoiled vistas, protected until now by a century of conservation begun by Governor Theodore Roosevelt, if you can even remember that far. And it's been celebrated by the art of two centuries, appreciated today by millions traveling on parkways and bikeways and bridges such as the George Washington Bridge, or cultural institutions like the Metropolitan Museum of Art, communities in New Jersey and in New York. It's right across us in Yonkers, so those are the Palisades. And we were hoping through this advert would be a win-win solution for LG to choose a low-rise design on a large 27-acre site to gain the same office space and same jobs and to protect the integrity of the Palisade. Well, lo and behold, once this thing was noted on our website, who do you think picked it up? News One. Not News One in New York. News One in Korea. Do you believe this, folks? You know, I'm having the impression that more Portuguese speakers are reading our paper and more Korean speakers are reading our virtual paper than maybe all of our English readers combined and our Hispanic readers combined. Well, lo and behold, this is very exciting. So I guess what this tells us is if you want to be seen, if you want to be heard, if you want to be recognized, guess what, folks? This is not an advertorial, but it is what it is, folks. It may be best to be seen, heard, or give expression on the Yonkers Tribune website. So think about it, yonkerstribune.com. Anyway, that's my piece. After 12 years online, it's nice to know that people are picking us up. Well, I'm having too much. I guess Dr. Roth, he didn't have to give me laughing gas or anything like that, but he put me in a complete state of calm because I was a nervous wreck. You know, I'll have to talk to him next time about the mental anxiety caused by the brain as opposed to the pain that one would feel because the synapses were flushing with an uproarious panoply of sound and noise, you know, in the mouth. But evidently that's not the case because they have that new technology, which is really exciting, especially that new technology where they stick something in your mouth and you take pictures of everything and you don't have to put all that goo in your mouth either, which is yuck. And so this is great. And it happens so quickly nowadays. Very, very good. So that's a story there. I see that we're approaching about the 11 o'clock hour. So before the assembly member gets on, Let's just simply find out what's going on at the Westchester Broadway Theater, and we'll be right back.
Luck be a lady tonight.
One of Broadway's most high-spirited musicals ever is on stage now at the Westchester Broadway Theater through June 9th. The Tony Award winner for Best Musical of the Year, Guys and Dolls.
Call it that.
It's one of the liveliest, funniest, most colorful collection of Broadway characters you'll ever see. The larger-than-life world of Damon Runyon's New York City, where the gamblers, the showgirls, the coppers, and the missionary workers all collide with hilarious and unexpected results. And the wonderful sing-along score includes some of Broadway's most memorable hits, like A Bushel and a Peck, If I Were a Bell, Sit Down, You're Rockin' the Boat, and Luck Be a Lady. And remember, your tickets include a delicious served dinner before the show with a choice of six entrees, and all for one low price. Order tickets online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222. Don't miss this bold and brassy Broadway classic, Guys and Dolls. On stage now through June 9th, only at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Welcome back. So this is Westchester on the Level, and my name is Hezia. I'm your host today. And then, of course, Shelley Mayer, she's expected around 11 o'clock, and at about 11:30, Barry McGoey, president of the International Association of Firefighters, president of Local 628, and, of course, Shelley Mayer, the assembly member representing Yonkers. So very, very interesting what's going on. And I don't know, pretty soon we're hoping to speak to some people who will speak to us about the goodwill of New Jersey and New York, of Greater New York and New Jersey. They're going to talk to us about their donation program. There's a place that's happening up in Bedford Hills, so that'll be an exciting thing to learn about. And we've added Melinda's garden. She's going to be doing gardening probably once a month for us, and always exciting. She's a renowned gardener and an unbelievable resume of accomplishments as well. So very fascinating read. And we'll just see what else is going on. And yet at the same time, there are rats all over the place. We're not talking about the rodent kind. We're talking about the humankind. So we're going to find out from Assembly Member Meyer how she contends with all that stuff, all that riffraff. And, you know, thank goodness we don't have any of our own up there, you know, in Albany. So ours are staying clean. Thank God for that. You know, it's so nice because there was a time when they used to laugh at our crew. Now it's luckily we can laugh at their crew. Because they say that nobody believes that their own are bad, and why should we? We don't want to go there. So we just like to laugh at everybody else's tourists, as they say, their own troubles, and that's fine with us. Hold on a split second, we'll find out what's going on. Good morning, Hez here. Hello. Okay, I'm on radio, so can I call you back, or do you want to call me after 12? Okay, give us a call after 12. Thanks. Bye. Okay, we'll take that call after 12 because we have no time to be talking and having private conversations on radio. But hey, this is what it's been like. Sometimes that happens, and that's always encouraging as well. All right, so everybody thinks everything is important, and it probably is. And that's what I love about this business, because everything is important. Though I don't have always the time to take care of it all. So it goes. Anyway, if you have an opportunity, go to Cosmolite, CosmaLite.com, and you could learn about the technology that Dr. Stephen E. Roth had founded, and so on and so forth. And so that's always encouraging. And I guess that's about it. So we're going to find out a little bit more about what else is happening. And, and I forgot, you can always go to SmilesNY, SmilesNY.com to go directly to his site. And you can get his address and phone number and all that information. And as the doctor suggested, that's the best way to introduce yourself to their practice and learn about what they do and how they do it with video testimonials and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting. I think you'll enjoy doing that. Okay, so on top of that, let's see what else is going on. We're going to wait for the assembly member. She's always on time, so she calls. She's good that way. And I'm trying to think what else I want to talk to you about. I want to save a lot of what had happened yesterday. Before the assembly member comes up, it'll be almost like a prelude to what's going to happen with Barry McGowey. Started the hearing yesterday. There was one on Tuesday, which I did not attend. I'm so far backlogged by all these meetings that they're holding, and it's not just an hour's meeting. These are meetings that are going on forever. Like yesterday's meeting was supposed to begin at 1 o'clock, didn't begin till about 1:30 or so, but that's neither here nor there. But the point is, it lasted till about 8 o'clock at night, from 1 o'clock to 8, and you got to be there to know what's going on, and very, very time-consuming, and yet at the same time, very little is learned. Very, very little is learned, and I really wonder why that is, because there's very little explanation as to what is really going on, where the money is, how the money is, why it's going on. It seems like more of a whoever comes up, who is the director or commissioner of a particular department, believes that they're there to give us a dissertation on their department. And in reality, there's nothing that I would like more than to hear about their department. But I certainly don't want to hear about it during the budget hearing because, you know what, they're wasting everybody's time. Don't really care to know what they do. If they haven't done a good enough job until that particular hearing, then I guess they should be considering doing something better with their time during the year. But certainly don't waste everybody's time to the budget hearing because you barely touch on the money issue. And that's the point, isn't it? We're there to discuss the money issue, not to discuss whether they put they're planting flowers or they're planting a new project for something that will come down the pike maybe 2 years from now. What have you done from the financial perspective to either curtail costs, to validate the need for spending more, or the value and integrity of your direction as you move ahead, and the cost factor as it ties into what's being done and planned for? So these are the concerns of the day, not whether you keep a tidy desk or whether you have gone to a particular exposition or another, or that you're keeping up with the latest technology. Sorry, kiddo, that's not what it's all about. Show me the money. Show me what you've done and show me how it's supposed to be done and share your expertise. Believe you me when I tell you that I was not initially too thrilled to hear the name of Cacace somehow being incorporated into the panoply of expertise when it came to the city of Yonkers. But as you well know, I keep an open mind, and here we are. I bumped into Mr. Cacace one day as he was walking up, and we got into the elevator going to the city council meeting, and somehow we started to talk, and I found out who he was, and he found out who I was, blah, 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 and it was fine, and everything was great. And then he showed me, by his assertion, which was true, that he was able to save the city from spending $170,000 a month to have reduced it down to $40,000 a month for technology that had been used but had not been used well because of a lack of expertise and lack of ratcheting up the ability and knowledge base of people operating computer systems in the city of Yonkers. And whereas he in deference as well to the mayor, who don't like to talk about bad things, it was interesting that he was able to show us how to save a buck or two. So let's hear from Assembly Member Shelley Mayer. Good morning, Assembly Member. How are you?
I am very well, Hezzy. How are you doing?
Thank God. Okay. I was worried about you because I'm hearing all this bad stuff about all these other people in government, you know, and they're being, you know, locked up and stuff. And I said, I just hope that Assembly Member Shelley Mayer can maintain her resolve mentally and be good about doing whatever she needs to do and not be bothered by all this pressure. But how do you maintain your positive attitude?
Well, one, I appreciate you thinking me. really, we should think about all the people who voted for people who are so cynical and disappointed. But I personally am very resolved to continue, you know, on the path. I don't know exactly how I managed to be an optimist under challenging circumstances, but, you know, I think if you try your best to hold yourself to the highest ethical standards and remember that you represent the people who voted and either voted for you or didn't vote for you, but you represent the people in your district, you know, you can keep your eye on the prize and try not to get distracted, but I would be dishonest if I didn't say it wasn't a very challenging time to be focused. But I have been focused. In fact, we only have 6 weeks left, and I'm working very hard on getting some bills passed, and I'm pushing ahead, full force ahead.
Well, that's really great. I guess what I was concerned about is, like, you know, these are such difficult times, you don't know who's who, you know, who's wearing a wire. Who's recording you? I mean, who's taking photos that you don't want taken? You know, it's like...
Well, I guess the best advice is don't do anything that you think is questionable, you know, and I think many elected officials, notwithstanding what we're hearing now, try to, one, live their personal lives in an ethical way and their political and professional lives in an ethical way. I certainly have tried to, and many of my colleagues do the same.
Absolutely.
It's unfortunate when this happens because everybody gets painted with a brush, and then you do start to second guess, you know, who you trust. But at the end of the day, you know, we're adults. We chose to be in this business, and we need to make smart choices. Don't do things that are problematic. And if you do, own up to them, apologize, and see if the voters forgive you for them. But other than that, you know, the focus has got to be, we have serious problems on doing the work at hand. And if you're not up to the task to be an elected official, frankly, you shouldn't be running and you shouldn't be in the business. And so it is disturbing, Hezzy. I would be dishonest if I didn't say so. But I'm vowed not to be sidetracked. And we got a lot of work to do. You know, I got a lot of bills. As I said, I'm pushing ahead and some things that I want, some things that a few things the city needs, and so we'll just keep plowing ahead.
Well, I wanted to ask you on that. I hope I didn't waste too much of your time, you know, asking a second question about that. But what are the concerns that you have? What is it that you're forging ahead with, and what is it that you'd like to see accomplished over the next 6 weeks?
Well, one is I have a series of bills, some of which I think have a chance, very honestly, at least in the Assembly and maybe in the Senate. One is, I think I've talked to you before about, excuse me, the persistent issues of flooding in not only in Yonkers, but, you know, throughout Westchester. And so I have a bill that would create either a task force or a council to make sure that these state agencies, including the Department of Transportation, Environmental Conservation, and some of our stakeholders actually have a consolidated planning process, because as there will be money over time for mitigation, and we have got to be smarter. So far, we've done it sort of on a municipal by municipal basis, which doesn't work because, you know, what you do in Scarsdale affects Yonkers, affects Bronxville and Tuckahoe. So one of my bills is to create either a task force or a council, and I'm optimistic. I'm working with the chair of the committee that we're going to get that going this term, and maybe it'll pass both houses, and that would be a real concrete thing. I have a bill that would require the Public Service Commission to actually hold hearings in the counties of the utilities they regulate. You know, after Sandy, some people in Grammaton Hills and East Yonkers asked me to get the Public Service Commission to come and hear their complaints about Con Ed, and the Public Service Commission said, no, we don't do hearings outside of Albany. So I have a bill that would require not only that they do hearings, but they actually give notice and provide information online and much more transparency about the conduct of the regulated utilities, particularly after storms. So I think that is another thing, you know, that I jumped into and am pushing hard, that came out of the Sandy and experience for many of my constituents. And seriously, it's not just me. I have many co-sponsors on these bills from all over the state. And I have a bill on some of the child care issues that came up at the county level, which I'm pushing hard on. You may remember, Hezzy, when the county executive tried to change the amount of the copay that low-income parents pay for subsidized child care, without sort of very much public conversation. And I have a bill that would require much greater public notice and input before such a plan can be approved. It's not saying that, you know, if there's not the money, you can't make changes, but you can't sort of do it secretly and without significant input so that people really understand and have a chance to examine the evidence of whether there is enough money. So that bill is also seems to be moving. I'm pushing very hard for that, and I'm hopeful. So those are three things I'm working hard on, and there's some things that the mayor would like that we're in the midst of drafting that would improve some of the processes in Yonkers. And hopefully, for example, last year we created the administrative tribunal to bypass city court for some quality of life complaints. And one possibility would be to merge that with the Parking Violations Bureau. So we have one administrative agency where people go for a hearing. And so we have a bill in for that, and we're looking at a number of other proposals the mayor has asked for, and I think some Assemblyman Pretlow will carry and some I'll carry. So we're just getting those in right now. But so the bottom line is, you know, we've got 6 weeks left to go, trying to be thoughtful, but on the other hand, be a very strong advocate for my constituents. And if I can keep going, you can shut me up.
Oh no! I this is really so important. I don't want to shut you up. That's why we're here talking to you, because you know what's going on. I don't.
Yeah. Well, one other piece of good news is I have been named, which is great because I'm only 1 year into my term, as the chair of a subcommittee on special needs students, which is a subcommittee of the Education Committee in the Assembly, which I'm thrilled about because that is really an opportunity for me to address both some of our special needs students in schools, public and private, throughout the state. And I'm going to be having a round table after the session ends in Yonkers with some of the parents and others, and also address some of the schools that are created to deal with some of these students who have particular needs. And we really need to pay more attention and have more policy discussion. So I'm very pleased about that. That's really a great opportunity for me to talk about something that I care about and learn from parents and advocates and then try to recommend some policy changes. So I got a lot going on the Albany front, notwithstanding the very, very tough and depressing and sad things that are happening around us.
No, that's actually very, very good. I think that's very exciting. Congratulations on that achievement. And like you said, in less than a year's time.
Yeah, I'm pleased about that.
And I think everybody else in the city is pleased as well for it, because you've always been an advocate for education, and certainly the least able to speak and defend for themselves are the ones that need special education.
Right.
I was wondering also about some of the other concerns. Anything more have you heard with regard to legislation being completed or moving towards completion with regard to the public-private partnership for education, or is that?
Well, I think one of the things that the mayor is looking at, and I'll let him speak for himself. Right? Is he on the show today? No, but he was.
No,
I think
he was on last week.
Yeah, is not going down the path of the public-private partnership, but making sure that the capital reimbursement that the City of Yonkers school system receives is on par with the other big cities.
Okay.
So that would require a legislative change. That is not a public-private partnership. That is saying we need to figure out a way to invest capital. We already get reimbursed for capital, but we get reimbursed at a rate that's disproportionately low, and it would require a statutory change to allow us to enter into a building program where we have enough money to really be able to rebuild and fix up some of these school buildings. So we're looking at legislation like they passed in Syracuse and in Rochester, where they have these building programs that they're basically able to use a fairer state rate of reimbursement, recognizing the needs of their school districts, and they're able to engage in a building and renovation plan. So that's the path that I believe the mayor is going on, and we're looking at that legislation.
Well,
rather than not the prior public-private partnership.
Yeah, well, it seems there were a lot of questions even asked, but the Board of Education has yet to respond to the questions asked of them by the Commission of Inquiry. So that's. Well, it's interesting how these things fly like balloons, and then they just burst somewhere along the way, and really wonder what it's all about.
Well, I think, just so you know, Hezzy, because you've been a very dogged advocate on this subject, and I can appreciate that, and I think it's made some difference. I think this is a different approach that the mayor is taking, and we'll be looking at the language of proposed legislation, but again, it would mirror what already is out there, or very similar to it in these other cities, where they are able to use state reimbursed capital, you know,
right,
and do what they need to do, but they have to put some money into this, and so that seems to be the path we're going down.
Well, you're talking about things similar to like what they're doing in Buffalo or in Syracuse, where the
The
reimbursement rate is at a level of about 90-95% of the total cost, whereas here in Yonkers, I think we're under 50.
Yeah, very low, and it requires a statutory change to get into that into a fairer place. So that's what we're working on.
And what are we doing? Is anything going to be furthered along the way with regard to bringing the Yonkers Parking Authority under the department of the City of Yonkers? Is that moving ahead, or is that stalled?
I'm not sure there is a bill in. I don't believe so to do that. I think that's a city decision. If they require state legislation or if they ask for it, then we'll deal with it. But at this point, I certainly am not carrying any bill that does that.
I wanted to ask you what else is important for you, because you're also going through the re-election process, aren't you?
Well, we're all going to run for re-election if we seek to in 2014.
Right.
I do support campaign finance reform, which passed in the Assembly, and I'm not sure that's the final form. I'm not sure the bill is perfect, but I think we absolutely need to have some serious campaign financing reform. So that is part of the conversation, as well as a number of other election reforms.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the Assembly, for example, the lines, that's all resolved now for another 10 years, and there will not, unless something changes, I don't anticipate a change in the redistricting lines or any of the other major parameters for running for office or being elected.
Are the redistricting lines, I didn't think that they were finalized in Yonkers yet, but you're talking about
the higher level. No, I think you're talking about the city council, right, Hezzy?
Okay. Say that again.
The city council is not, as I understand, has not been finalized, but the state assembly lines that Assemblyman Pretlow and I and the Senate lines, those are all fixed.
Okay, that's important to know as well. So at least we know about that. Are you concerned that the Yonkers City Democratic Committee is holding its convention on the 30th of May? Does that give enough time for the parties to put it all together for the election?
Well, I think it actually was a good move by the Yonkers Democratic Executive Committee, of which I'm a member, because a prior date did conflict with the public hearing on the budget.
Yeah.
And I want to go to that hearing. As a district leader, I want to hear what my constituents think about the proposed executive budget. I went last year. You know, not that I vote on the budget, but I need to know. So I plan to go, and I know many of the other both elected officials and district leaders who would vote in the convention. So I think it was a smart thing to push it back. I think we will have enough time to make a decision and get our people on the ballot. And just in my partisan hat as a member of the Democratic Committee, you know, I am hopeful we'll field some strong candidates and be able to have a smart debate about the future of Yonkers. That's what I think a good party system can lead to. It doesn't always happen, and we've had our disappointments on that score in Yonkers. But I always like to think that the value of having strong candidates, two or three or whatever, is that people really do hear people speak and disagree. You may remember, Hezzy, one of the challenges for me is, I mean, I'm not complaining, I had no opponent, but nobody was really very interested in the issues in the assembly race because I didn't have an opponent. So when you have a robust disagreement and debate, people engage, they make choices, and I think that's what a party's responsibility is, and I'm hopeful we're going to be able to be successful in some of these.
Most definitely. Well, you know, you've proven yourself to be self-propelled, so to speak, so you know that you weren't in need of that, you know, like impetus to keep focused and to accomplish what needs to be done. Not many people are that way, so lucky for us.
I appreciate it. I think it's a nice thing to say. But I would say this. You know, Yonkers is an incredibly dynamic and exciting place. People are moving here.
Yes.
Many, immigrant new Americans, many people moving from New York who want to live in the suburbs and sort of a suburban-urban community. And a lot of those people care about the future, not only the city, the state, and the country. They're prepared to get engaged. Doesn't mean party politics, and I don't think everyone has to be in that. But, we do have an obligation to participate in a democracy in a civic way, and I like to encourage people to get into the mix.
Most definitely. I want to ask you about some things that eclipse just the local arena. What are we doing, or what can we expect from the New York State Legislature, both Assembly and Senate, with regard to immigration? We have a large population of Spanish speakers who may or may not be documented and who work or live even in Yonkers. We also have a large immigrant that's also undocumented from Ireland who live in Yonkers, and maybe others as well. Is there anything that you see in the future from the New York State Legislature that's going to affect our population?
Well, first, I mean, I strongly support federal immigration reform along the lines of the Schumer proposal. I think we absolutely need, you know, a smart bipartisan fix to this problem. It's just not acceptable. And so I think in the Assembly, I believe we actually passed a resolution calling on Congress, which is really the one that got to act here.
Yes.
To act. That being said, there are some things on the state legislative docket that I think will be considered. Last year we did a Dream Fund, which is not the Dream Act, but was a privately funded fundraising opportunity for undocumented children who came here basically as babies, and this is their home, and went to public school all the way, or school all the way through high school graduation, to be eligible for grants for college tuition. I think we're probably going to move towards a DREAM Act. I hope we do. I support it. I think for many children of Yonkers, and I meet them in the public schools who came here at one or two and lived here and participate, regardless of the citizenship status of their parents, they are American through and through and tend to stay here, are going to make the most of it. Many of them are the valedictorians and salutatorians of their classes in the Yonkers High Schools. And we should find a way to make sure they, if they're able and capable, that they get to college. And so I think we may pass that. The Senate has been very reluctant to do so. So we'll have to see how that works out.
I wanted to ask you about that with regard to immigration status, you know, bringing about a pathway towards citizenship and the costs involved, especially with regard to education. Are we going to forget the indigenous people who've lived here all their lives as well? Because can we afford to do everything and yet at the same time not forget the people who've lived here all their lives, parents and grandparents, and they've been citizens as well? Are we affording our population, as well as those that have come into the U.S. legally or illegally, the ability to thrive by getting the education that's required? Are we giving them grants?
I mean, it's not a one or the other by any means. I mean, our Social Security, Medicare, opportunity to attend affordable college, these are the top of the priority list as far as I'm concerned. We absolutely, you know, it's not a choice. We're not picking one group over another. At least I'm not for that. We owe, and we already have, a very strong system in which we need to strengthen to make college affordable for all Americans. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. We need to protect those Security and Medicare. Those are federal issues that I strongly support. But to say that, like many states have done, that for children who come here, you know, at a young age and basically attend school and graduate and are going to be productive members of the American society, one, we need to find a path for citizenship for them. That doesn't punish those that came here legally, but gives those that came here illegally a pathway, and also provides them the opportunity to give and contribute. It absolutely should never be seen, in my view, as one against the other. And I don't think that's a very compelling argument, you know, as far as the finances of the federal government. But on the state level, you know, we are very committed to making sure that every state benefit for people here legally remains protected and, in fact, enhanced. You know, I'm strongly in favor of changing some of the college affordability rules so that everyone can afford, who wishes to go, can afford, instead of this ridiculous system where the college debt extends for years and years and years after you graduate, including if you go to some of our public colleges, although they're doing the best they can under very trying circumstances.
Right, absolutely. And so what do you see as over the next 6 weeks? You've got enough on your plate. Are you envisioning other issues and concerns into the future?
Well, I'll just tell you some other things. One, I'm going to have a town hall meeting. I believe it's in the second week of June, at the Riverfront Library, just so I can update people what's happening at the end of session and get their input. Later in June, I'm co-sponsoring with St. John's Riverside a program on the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, that's the federal health care bill, and what it really means for individuals in Yonkers, to expert panelists. And so we've got a lot of, you know, events for the future that we're going to be working on. So first we'll get through the next 6 weeks and try to pass some of the bills that are important, and then go on and make sure that in anticipation of next year, one, I hear from our constituents about what their concerns are and start to draft bills and policies that are responsive. So I feel very optimistic and encouraged by the very positive response that I've received, including during this time where, as I said, many people feel cynical. I've been very encouraged that people have been very supportive of my efforts to make a difference. Again, never promising success, but you got to be in there to fight it.
Absolutely. Before you go, I wanted to ask you, when you work with an institution like St. John's Riverside, what I found of late, maybe the last 5 years, is that we tend to gravitate towards one hospital and not to another in Yonkers. We've got two great institutions, St.
Yes.
John's Riverside, of course, and St. Joseph's Medical Center, and certainly with the clout of St. Joe's, you know, aligning itself with, was it St. Vincent's as well?
Yeah.
It's larger
yeah.
the institutions. You know, from the perspective of an elected official, would you be able to bring some of this together so that it seems more that we celebrate all of Yonkers hospitals?
I'm one of the biggest fans of St. Joseph's. I, in fact, in a prior life, I was represented them as a advocate in Albany.
Mm.
And I know their issues very well, and I go there frequently. We're going to be doing programs with them as well on the range of issues that many of their patients and community experiences. So I agree with you. We're not in the competitive group. We're in the serve the constituents through the resources.
Right.
And if we can do it, we'll be working closely with St. Joseph's, as I have already in the year that I've been in the Assembly.
Well, that's wonderful. It's good to hear, because, you know, I sometimes think that people forget, you know.
Oh, no, not at all.
City, and I just love them all, you know.
I feel the same.
Yeah, which is cool. Well, I want to thank you again for making the time, because it's always a learning experience, and I appreciate your hanging in there despite all the trials and tribulations of Albany. So,
if
you cling to Yonkers, you'll be safe.
Thanks, Hezzy. Very much appreciate the opportunity.
Be well, and happy Mother's Day as well.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Be well. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, that's good. So, perfect timing. I can't believe it. So, we're going to be speaking with Barry McGowey. He's on the air. Hello, Mr. McGowey.
Good morning, Hezzy. How are you?
Good morning. You know, I couldn't have planned this any better. You're perfect timing.
Well, I was listening to Assemblywoman Mayer, and it sounded like she was wrapping up, so I figured it'd be a perfect time to call in.
It really is. Well, it was good to see you yesterday. It was a wonderfully large contingent of firefighters that also attended the hearing. We were going through that budget hearing, that cycle that began earlier this week on Tuesday, had a break on Wednesday, and then Thursday yesterday from 1 o'clock in the afternoon to 8 o'clock at night, and then I guess next week as well. What did you notice when they were discussing particularly the issues that would have had the greatest of impact on the Yonkers firefighters?
Well, actually, I was most interested in the probably non-response regarding the questions about the SAFER fund, the SAFER grant.
Yes.
Where that is accounted for in the budget. I don't
Have
see...
you noticed that it hadn't been?
No, I don't see any specific accounting in the budget or in the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, which are the audited financial statements from last year, for the SAFER grant. Now, Finance Commissioner John Lazuski said it wasn't included in this year's budget because it was a prior year's grant, but if they're planning on using the funds from a prior year's grant, I would expect that at least there'd be some inclusion, whether in a footnote or somewhere, as to what that anticipated grant revenue will be.
Well, that's what was interesting. After I left the council chambers last night, and I expected to just depart. It was a long day for me. And then I said, you know what? they're probably down there on the second floor. So that's what I did. So I decided to stop off on the second floor because I think I had said goodbye to you. You were engaged in a conversation. I didn't want to interrupt, so I just waved goodbye. And I ended up heading down to the second floor. And I asked that same question. I said, I don't understand it. It looks like you've allocated $5 million, but then there's $12 million in total costs. So how are you going to get that $7 million differential? How are you going to cover that? Because Mr. Leziski, the finance commissioner, said that he doesn't anticipate that they would end up being short. So I asked the same question of Mr. Steve Levy, the mayor's chief of staff, and he said that they anticipate that we'll have the coverage of the Hurricane Sandy FEMA loan and other costs so that 80% of what they need will be covered, 80 to 90%. So that's what they anticipate. But I realized later, well, and what happens if it doesn't get anticipated or it's delayed? Then what do we do?
And did you get a response from that question?
Oh, well, I was too stupid to ask it at the time. Actually, I wouldn't have been too stupid. It's just that I was interrupted by somebody else who was there on staff. It was actually Sue Gehry, the deputy mayor, who came into Mr. Levy's office, and knowing that she wanted to speak to Levy, I said, okay, I'll be leaving. As I stepped out, I saw that she and Mr. Leziski were on the second floor talking, waiting for Mr. Levy to join them in conversation. But that was it. So, no, I didn't get an answer to that. That's my question.
Yeah, it's a very good question, and hopefully we get an answer. Unfortunately, many of the budget documents that we see year after year cause more questions to be asked and more answers not to be answered. Yesterday we had a disclosure from the finance commissioner that the fire department overtime is in the neighborhood of $12 million. You recall that, right?
Yeah, I do.
Well, just less than a month ago, when they prepared this budget, if you look at the current overtime, it's nowhere near that. And they're actually showing that, as opposed to the adopted budget, the total fire department budget of $53 million, that the current $53,073, that's the adopted, that the current is estimated to be $53,216, which is a variance, you know, of about $150,000, I'd say.
Yeah.
So if they had anticipated a $5 million overage in overtime, you would think that in a budget document that was prepared less than a month ago or issued less than a month ago, that that would be reflected in that budget document. But they're showing the current fiscal year 2013 total expenditure for the fire department to basically be $150,000 above what it was adopted at. So why that doesn't raise questions and eyebrows and why the city's auditor doesn't confront the finance commissioner regarding that. Well, if it's going to be $12 million, shouldn't that be reflected in the budget book? Like I said, I pore over these budget books year after year, and unfortunately, they lead to more questions than answers.
Well, you're very right. It's unfortunate that, when the auditor doesn't ask the questions, and he seemed to be the most aggressive yesterday, asking some questions that seemed to bend some of the commissioners, particularly John Leziski's mind a little bit. We don't really have enough support from the Yonkers City Council membership. Also annoying to me was the fact that Mr. Sabatino wasn't there from the 3rd District, and neither was Mr. Shepard from the 4th District, one Democrat, one Republican, which doesn't wash the whole issue. I know Mr. Sabatino was supposed to be at his regular work, but then you would think that they would realize when we have budget hearings, because we have them every year, and I don't know what happened to Mr. Shepard, and yet the others didn't have a good grasp on issues that were really important, and it's all financial. And
well,
yet,
which are, you know, they're at a disadvantage because, you know, they are part-time city council members. This is a tremendous...
It's true.
It's a tremendous budget with many different departments, and they, you know, quite honestly, don't have the expertise and
shouldn't
they shouldn't be expected to have a full expertise and understanding of every single item in the budget. That's why they have consultants. That's why Mr. DeSantis is there as a consultant. He's also the auditor. So, you know, it's he should be a very useful tool, but I would hope that they would use him and have his knowledge to assist them. But these are, you know, that's a question that, you know, a layman should be able to ask is, well, if you printed a budget document less than a month ago, how can you be sitting here today saying something which is in total contradiction to what that budget document's saying? The fact that they said that their overtime was going to be $12 million, you have to remember that there will be a significant overage on the overtime because we were short-staffed so many firefighters throughout the year. They just hired 30 firefighters.
Yeah.
The day those firefighters graduate, we'll have 25 additional vacancies. So we had, at the time they were hired, we had 45 vacancies. And most of those vacancies were almost for the full year. So we'll have an overage on the overtime as a result, but there'll also be a corresponding deficit on the salary line. And what they'll do is transfer money from the salary line into the overtime line. It's something that happens on a regular basis, and especially in the police department and the fire department. As a police officer retires or a firefighter retires, you don't hire someone immediately. You wait till you have enough people to hire a class. So in the interim, you have this money budgeted for salaries that you're not paying because the person no longer works for the city. So they'll be able to take those dollars that were earmarked for salaries, and instead of using them for salaries, use them for overtime. And that's exactly what happened in the fire department. We were short-staffed so many individuals that the overtime went through the roof. So they took the millions of dollars allocated for salaries for dozens of positions. Let's say we're 45 vacancies and close to $100,000 per vacancy. Right there would be $4.5 million if they were vacant for the whole year. So I'll bring it down to, you know, based on they gradually, we started off the year with, I believe, 24 vacancies. We ended up with about 44. So the total money that they didn't spend on salaries was probably somewhere in the neighborhood of $3 million. So that $3 million would go over to the overtime. So that would cause the overtime to go up. The salary line would go down. So your net effect was that you'd have an increase in overtime, but it was paid for by the savings of not paying those salaries.
We're speaking with Barry McGoey, president of Local 628, the International Association of Firefighters based out of Yonkers. There was another issue that came up as well with, you know, increasing costs. Like Commissioner Sweeney, he wants to have two more people under his watch. Isn't that going to create more costs that were not necessary?
Absolutely. You know, in fiscally tough times, to be increasing the administrative, you know, staff and bureaucracy of the fire department is not, I don't believe, is a wise expenditure of taxpayer dollars. What the commissioner is proposing is almost $500,000 between salaries, benefits, and everything else for two deputy commissioners to assist him in running the fire department. The fire, you know, the commissioner comes from New York City with 30-some-odd years of experience. He was one of the top operational chiefs in New York City. And we don't have the money in Yonkers for many of the things that they have in New York City, including deputy commissioners. He has three deputy chiefs to assist him in running the fire department. That's been adequate for generations to actually get the work done and to be as efficient as you possibly can, given the confines. But just as we can't afford six firefighters on a truck, like New York City does, we have four.
Yeah.
We can't afford an incredible bureaucracy running a department of $50 million. You know,
absolutely not. Did you also take away the impression that the different departments, when they came before the Yonkers City Council and the chair, that they were giving us like a, almost like a, I guess, a whitewash over the department, as if it's so important to learn every little aspect of what they do. Isn't it supposed to be a budget hearing rather than, you know, slap me on my back, I'm doing such a great job, whether it be Corporation Council or Department of Parks and Rec and all that stuff? To me, it's all about money. Is that what's important, or am I losing it again?
Well, you know, I think it's important that each commissioner come in and give a brief overview of what their department does.
Okay.
But at some point, it becomes superfluous and just puffing.
Yeah.
It's actually taking away valuable time. These council members, you know, they don't have a lot of time. There's a lot of departments to review in a very condensed schedule. And, you know, when you go on and on and on about, you know, whether it's the fire department or the parks department, that takes away from the substantive discussion about, you know, how much money are we spending and how are we spending it.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to, every department wants to go in there and brag about how good they are. You know, we want to have to say we have the best parks department in the country and the best fire department and the best police department. You know, that's natural, but I wish, you know, sometimes the city council would limit them. Similarly to how they limit the public to speak before them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, otherwise they can clog up the microphone for a considerable period of time and reduce the actual time for substantive discussions.
Well,
one of the things, to, in response to a question, the fire commission was asked if they could hire a class immediately, because, you know, it's pretty obvious to everybody that even though when they graduate this class from the academy, we're still going to incur a significant amount of overtime because of the vacancies.
Mm-hmm.
The commissioner said that based upon the contract, they couldn't, because there's provisions in the contracts which limits the ability to do training because of temperature and weather conditions. And, although there is a provision in the contract, it's never been applied to a training class. Most firefighters have been hired either in the summer or in the winter. That's just generally naturally how it occurs, and there would be no prohibition or grievance filed by the union, because I was hired in the last day of October, and we went through November, December, January, and February in the academy, and I can guarantee you every day I was up there, it was less than 32 degrees, and there was no grievance or objection claimed by the union. There never has been. So that was basically just a, you know, trying to come up with an excuse of why they don't want to hire a class immediately when we should, to reduce the overtime.
Well, that's so interesting, because it turned out that is the issue that was brought up by Yonkers City Hall by some of the officials that I spoke to yesterday, and they wanted to demonize the firefighters for not being able to work if it was over 85 degrees,
right,
or under 32 degrees, or.
But I just find it the height of hypocrisy that they're willing to violate. We had to go to court and obtain temporary restraining orders because they're willing to violate substantive provisions of our contract regarding staffing and whether or not we provide emergency medical services, yet they're going to claim that this provision in the contract prevents them from doing something. You know, if the contract meant so much to them, they wouldn't have violated it in the past, and we wouldn't have had to go to court. So it's really, it's not really a fair defense to why they won't hire a class, and they should hire a class immediately to stop the bleeding. You know, this, we're so short right now. Like I said, we're short 45 firefighters because the class they hired are still in training. You know, Mother's Day is coming up, and we have members that can't get off for Mother's Day to spend with their mother, with a personal day, because we all have personal days to use, because there's no one to work. There's no one even to work on overtime. You know,
that's amazing.
So it's been very hard on the fire department this past year. We've gone through the holiday seasons where, you know, members with many years on, and in the past when you're relatively full staffed, you know, someone with 20 years on can get Christmas Day off or get New Year's Eve off to be with their family. But since there's no one available to work, even on overtime because you're so short, members can't even utilize some of our contractual benefits of getting personal days. Because we work a 24/7 schedule, and if you happen to be in the squad that's working on Easter, or Mother's Day or, you know, any of those days, you can't get off unless someone's willing to work. And when you have so many vacancies, there's just not enough people willing to work.
There's not enough
candidates available. So it's not good for us to have to have so many vacancies and have so much overtime.
I've got to ask you with regard to contractual, I guess, coming together of the minds. I know that the teachers, they have their union contract confirmed and signed. And there are two other teacher-related unions. And their DPW, the Teamsters, they're in negotiation. Are you engaged in negotiation with the city?
We have been involved in, we had a significant series of off-the-record unofficial discussions over a period of time. And then, as you may recall, a couple of months ago, the city declared impasse in unofficial negotiations and issued a press release claiming victory. So we've engaged in a series of mediations with the city, which are still ongoing, and we'll see how, you know, that develops. We're trying to keep an open mind, try to be as reasonable as possible, given the circumstances regarding the city's finances, given the circumstances regarding our members and the fact that they haven't had a raise in 4 years, mm-hmm. the circumstances that other bargaining units within the city, albeit they're in the Board of Education, it's still the city of Yonkers, they've received raises. So it's all of these things combined together. It's, you know, of course, the city's going through economic hardship, as most of us are.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's we're trying to keep as an open mind as we can and trying to be reasonable. And we'll just see how that process develops. Unfortunately, it's not a process that's when you go down the formal route, it's not a process that can be done very quickly. And that's why we had attempted to, in good faith, to do it informally and off the record. So there's not as many attorneys involved and scheduling of attorneys and meetings. But unfortunately, you know, we weren't able to come to terms that way. So it looks now for we'll go forward with the legal procedural way. And that's going to take a long time. It's not something that's going to be resolved this month, next month. It's not going to be resolved probably by January or February of next year.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, you know, they need to hire additional firefighters to stop the bleeding of the overtime.
That really is, sticking point, and it's, I guess, needs to, I can't imagine we can continue like this forever and ever. Still, make sure we have balanced budgets, you know, it doesn't make sense. I wanted to ask you about something that comes from the side, in a sense. We went through the troubles of the bombings in the Boston Marathon. More people are being arrested with pots. Canada, remember, there were people that were caught, I think it was about a week after the crisis in the Boston Marathon. Are we doing any special training well with regard to the firefighters you're aware of that we can discuss, or are we just is that constant vigilant type of process that the fire department goes through?
Well, both the fire department and the police department in the city of Yonkers do the best possible job we can in planning for an event. We are the next-door neighbors to the biggest terrorist target in the world that has been attacked on numerous occasions. All of our members and our administrators are quite cognizant of that, and we do the best we can. And we've trained to respond. God forbid there was an incident in New York City. This is the evacuation route is directly through Yonkers. I mean, they're not going to Long Island. God forbid there was some type of nuclear chemical device in New York City. You can't go over the Hudson River. You're not going to Long Island. You're going north, and the only way to go north is through Yonkers.
Mm-hmm.
So we have different, you know, we can't even discuss them publicly.
Right.
But there are plans in place. But the issue is that you need people to carry forward those plans. And it is dangerous when we start getting to where we're talking about not keeping an adequate number of police officers and firefighters that have the training and are going to know what to do in the event of some emergency. And as we saw just the other day when we had Yonkers being so close to a place like New York City, it's a natural, whether you're dealing drugs, whether you're a terrorist, or as we saw the other day regarding the bank fraud.
Yes.
These guys were from Yonkers. Why? Because they're close proximity to New York City and to all the money in New York City. So just as they do that for the finance, they'll do it for other untoward reasons. And we have to be ever vigilant. And, we do the best we can, given the limited resources. And in recognition of our importance as far as terrorism and Homeland Security, the Department of Homeland Security has provided the Yonkers Police Department, Fire Department, Office of Emergency Management with millions and millions of dollars worth of equipment to deal with a terrorist attack. We have immunizations available to us in bulk quantities in the event of an attack, and that our members are trained in decontamination. God forbid, trainloads of people are coming from New York City, and they've been exposed to some type of weapons of mass destruction or some kind of chemical warfare agent. We'll have the capability at least to start staging areas and decontamination areas, but that takes personnel. So when we think about, a fire department or a police department in a city like Yonkers, it's not just Yonkers, it's in the region. And, regionally we're very important, not only, because of Yonkers itself, our homeland, but to provide those emergency services to assist New York City, which we did on 9/11 and immediate days right after, and then also to deal with any civilians because, where do you think they're going? God forbid there was something happened, 8 million people in New York City. They're all not going out to Hempstead.
No.
They're heading north, and they got to come through us. And then we, in addition to that, we have to prevent, we have to make sure, God forbid there's an incident in New York City, that people don't come to Yonkers and get off and just mingle and carry whatever they have. So we have to have the ability to get to our areas, which were on evacuation routes, to make sure that anybody who's coming is going to be directed in the right location and accounted for. Because the last thing you want is somebody coming off a train station on Yonkers and then exposing Yonkers people to something they haven't been exposed to. But these are all the, it's the police, the fire, they work in conjunction with one another, with Homeland Security, with federal agencies, and it takes people and to do we're like an army. You don't want to have to spend money in having a military in this country, but if we didn't, what would be the alternative? And we're emergency services, we protect the home front, God forbid, any activities going on out there. And we're critically important, and we shouldn't just be minimized as this unnecessary expense and then try to be vilified, because in that darkest moment, the people that are going to be called upon are your public servants. It's going to be your police officers, your firefighters, your emergency service workers, Empress Ambulance. It's going to be the Department of Public Works, teachers. Who's going to take care of the kids? We saw what happened in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
At the point we want to vilify everybody who works for government and talk down about, teachers died shielding children.
Yeah.
And everybody's so quick to, complain about teachers, and they shouldn't have a pension, and why should they have health benefits? But yet those are the people we send our most cherished possessions, our children, to spend the bulk of their waking hours with. We've come to, really resent the anti-public sector worker. People in the public sector, police, fire, DPW, teachers, have committed our lives to public service. And knowing that you're never going to strike it rich, you're not going to get those big bonuses, but you're going to get, a decent salary and good benefits, and you'd have a pension to secure yourself and your family.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because, to be honest, a lot of people quickly forget, until it strikes them at home. When you get a bombing like on the Boston Marathon, it could happen with our Yonkers Marathon.
It's actually probably it's more likely in a place. I think now New York City, they have so much, so many cameras. They have so many police officers and so many federal agencies there because they are such a target. And I think that's why you saw these guys go to Boston and to the smaller cities that really just don't have 30,000 police officers they can deploy for a major event. The city of Yonkers, we have a marathon, how many police officers can we deploy?
Mm-hmm.
And how many firefighters can we have on standby in the case of an emergency? So I think, you know, I don't mean to more bang for the buck, forgive the pun, but
yeah.
For some of these terrorist groups, it's the smaller cities that don't have the financial and operational capabilities to defend themselves are probably a better target.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, Mr. McGulley, president of the Local 628 International Association of Firefighters, we've basically come to the last 15 seconds. So I hope you'll come and speak to us again because it's
absolutely
important.
And thank you for all you do.
Thank you. It's good to know we're under your watchful eye. So you have a good week and happy Mother's Day to you, your wife, and your parents, and so on. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Ezzy.
Be well.
Bye.
There you are. We'll speak to you on Monday. Got to go. Take care and goodbye and happy Mother's Day.